Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome now to Home Run. That's with Helmut and Dwight, and signing out for those of you that have been listening, for those of you that tuned in from the beginning. You have been listening to different programs, and of course the one that just signed out, that was all Wazi. And they had an interesting discussion, that's a national rural development policy, which somewhat factors into today's discussion. And I'm just starting with it because, you know, they did, you know, congratulate Kavangos of being excellent and taking care of our environment.
Yeah.
That's the part where I was like, yeah, you got to learn from us. Now, anyway, look, the thing, we don't dominate the security cluster for no reason. We're very good at taking care of stuff. I'm not helping my case, am I?
Helmut, which security cluster? Let's ask that question.
I don't want to be excommunicated from the region. Anyway, so, but today's discussion is, or more like today's home run discussion is, now I'm saying it somewhat leans into the, you know, rural development discussion that just recently, you know, signed out. But now I'm saying it leans into that direction because we are talking about energy transition in reference to the state of green hydrogen as a source of energy globally in terms of adoption. And the main source of reference in terms of this or in terms of the green hydrogen adoption discussion, not just adoption globally, and I mean it's globally because the report was compiled by the International Energy Agency, so it's they're going to look at obviously, you know, they're going to look at it on a wider scope, not on a national or regional. They're just looking at, but they do look at different, you know, countries' contribution in terms of investment and adoption. But they are, you know, the report is based on the global investment in terms of money, which obviously feeds into the infrastructure development associated with the green hydrogen as a source of energy, and makes draws the overall energy transition picture.
However, we technically had something else for Home Run Helmut, just to let you know.
What is that?
Our show, obviously, our topic. One talking, obviously, about a hydrogen perspective.
Hydrogen. Yeah.
But just before we get into that talking point, Helmut, you know, that's why in many cases I sometimes like a balance of, you read on policies, reports, on documents, on legislation sometimes also.
Yeah.
And then you go out in the real life, ne?
Just not that comparison.
Just like you highlighted, no, ne, by not being excommunicated from the regions, and said dominance also in the security cluster. Hence I emphasize which security cluster. But there's a good thing that you also highlighted specifically in that example.
Yeah.
In many cases, we sometimes have to put reality right next to
the theory and the practical application.
Okay, but we know that theory wants to achieve a specific position, right?
Yeah.
So it's always good to use the realities on the ground to try and measure. Okay, so how much are we trying to achieve what we said in theory on the ground? Now, the downside is, unfortunately, Namibia is not great on the evaluation and on the monitoring process. Namibia is not. And this was once again emphasized just last week by the Africa Peer Review Mechanism discussion, whereby the APRM Namibia branch was hosted by the civil society guys to highlight, you know, that civil society works very closely with the APRM people. Now, when you are trying to reach goals, let's say you tell yourself, hey, today I would like to walk 35 kilometers because I'd like to increase my heart rate, you know, just to make your body, your heart pump a little, the blood through your body a lot more, and basically to encourage healthy living and exercise and all that other stuff and all that other jazz. There's always something that helps you monitor your progress. Now, we've obviously seen it's technology, consumer technology.
Yeah.
But if you look at a massive countrywide approach, let's, for example, say, Helmut, like this green hydrogen discussion.
Yeah.
You know, reading through this document, this review document from the IEA,
yeah.
And then I went like, ministerial review. Whose ministry? Oh, championed by the government of Japan. I'm like, oh, okay. Now we can understand why the government of Japan back in May, not in May, back in March, went and released 40 million barrels of strategic oil reserves.
Yeah.
The IEA asked them most. The IEA went most to member countries and asked, guys, let's help stabilize global oil supply.
Yeah.
And then Japan was like, we will make a commitment of 40 million barrels right now. And then they released it.
Yeah.
And then China looked like, you know what? We're not part of this club of the IEA, but we'll also do something. And then America went like, we'll think about it, but we will release something. And then just for me to find out from Jai Shankar last month, the United States under Biden asked India to buy oil from Russia to help stabilize the global oil price.
That's one of the dumb things that I don't understand about politics. You know, why not just stop the war? In that case, then you don't have to,
Then we don't have to force people to do something.
Exactly. You don't have to fly around negotiating with different countries to release their oil, their storage oil reserves.
But also, remember what I said now, looking at a theory and comparing it to the reality.
Yeah.
Now, the theory in that scenario is, let's look at the narrative that was driven. Russia is to be sanctioned. No one should buy Russian oil. You know, if there were no sanctions and this Strait of Hormuz, this block plus block equals unblock, happened still in 2026, Namibia should have had the first dibs and option to buy directly from Russia. But Namibia can't buy directly from Russia. But now Namibia is forced to do these other little weird ballet dances and sign strategic 3-month agreements with Vitol, and then other distribution companies pop up. Weird things happen, Helmut. Smoke and mirrors, it looks almost like smoke and mirrors thing, antics. But then you go think to yourself, so, in essence, if Russia wasn't sanctioned,
and they were participating, aka their oil was
freely flowing,
participating in the global oil,
which it basically still is. You know, it's most the ghost.
Yeah,
it's the ghost fleet.
I mean, it is still, but there's a lot of technicalities in terms of international law technicalities being exploited.
Yeah.
By India, and they've been doing it for a while, and it's really beautiful. Now. Look,
it's really beautiful. Why are you complimenting the beauty of strategy, Alvin?
No, look, man, I like technicalities, and when I see them being exploited,
yeah,
I just can't help but laugh. And also, at the same time, you want to, you can't help but ask yourself, you know, all these things can be avoided, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like we don't have to jump through hoops to trade with each other.
Yeah.
Like both India and Russia are sovereign nations. They can trade with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Iran has its own, resources. It can trade with whoever it wants. But the thing is, it brings us to basically empires. Empires like to run around and preach democracy, human rights and all that, but it has always been about control. That's the thing. And now you have, you have people that are already filthy rich and fully grown men and women just playing jump rope with the global economy.
Mm.
And the people that are being caught in a crossfire are the most vulnerable.
Definitely.
Yeah, you're talking, well, women and children, children and your average income earners. And if you look at the global cost of living and the division between the haves and have-nots, and if you want to be politically correct, but if you want to be hermetically correct, those who can afford bologna and those who cannot. So you have you have your new, now you have.
Bologna is affordable, Helmut. It's now just $25.
Okay, it's scary that you memorize the price, but anyway.
I walk in as a consumer, but I don't walk in as a man. As a consumer, you go look at the price.
Yeah.
Okay, so you are also Pink Baloney and you're also Pink Baloney.
Yeah.
Which one is the better?
Look, the thing is, when it comes to, this is what brings us to the, to asking the questions, questions like, the blueprint that we have drawn with regards to any initiative or any project, whether it's national or global. When you look at the blueprint as we have it in the fancy English that we have it in the document, it's impeccable. Everything, if you just read any piece of, any piece of treaty, any piece of legislations with regards to how do we achieve global security, for example.
Yeah.
The English is spot on. You have the call them measures of penalizing countries that break international law, international treaties. Everything is well documented, except when it comes to applying those laws, you have a complete opposite. That's where you begin to see that when Namibia violates a certain treaty, for example, that is a signatory to, it's very easy to punish them. But when countries like your just top five guys that are on the UN Security Council do the exact same thing, well, no one just does anything.
Yeah.
Now, when the international body is trying to investigate some of the suspected perpetrators in disturbing the global security, the military arms and legal arms and financial powers from these developing countries starts basically freezing bank accounts of the investigators. And we can see that with the, with a bunch of officials, the top officials coming out of the ICC. So this is then the problem. So, you have, a bunch of very powerful countries that make the rules, but then they don't want to follow the rules.
Or they start threatening you.
Yeah. I mean, when you don't follow the rules, they just put up some massive PR calling you all kinds of names. But they are doing the exact same thing that you are doing. It's just that, well, they control, what's that word? The narrative.
Yeah. The narrative.
So the whole thing becomes a very, the whole thing becomes a narrative war. That's why I keep going back to 2022, 2023, Angelina Jolie's interview with that Turkish journalist and videographer. When she got into the humanitarian space, because she worked for a very long time, for about 20 years with UNICEF. When she got into the humanitarian space, her thoughts were, you know what, we're not perfect as a species. We have these laws that we have that were written down, post World War II, and we have the ICC, ICJ, you have the UN, and all its agencies. Now we have civil society organizations, and we have NGOs. So we can work towards getting better, but we have got to start by applying the laws that we have written down. When someone breaks, these laws, it doesn't matter whether they're from a powerful country, a powerless country, global north, global south, if they break the law, they have to be punished. Well, her surprise was when she got in there, she came out of it realizing that, then I came to learn that, there are human rights for these ones and not these ones. And the one line that I memorized from that interview was, they say, punishment for this one, but not this one if there are business interests involved.
Oh, no. It's a discussion that we even had here, Helmut, before you and I joined up for the home run. Remember the 3-year-old used in the company document registration as the main shareholder? Remember when you had the show?
I think that was a 5-year-old.
It was a 5-year-old. Yeah. Remember when you had the home run and I did the business and economic segment?
Yeah.
And we followed it after each other and we literally had to literally debate with our callers the same points. You went on a legal perspective. Yeah. I also went on a quasi-legal to highlight, listen, if the loophole exists.
Yeah.
And there's no plug or stopgap to stop the loophole, then the loophole is legal.
It's going to be exploited. Yeah.
And it's legal.
It is.
Then the second one was that I came back the next day was about party contributions. Remember?
The story I told
you about the ECN discussion and people were asking, but if the ruling party receives a donation, it's capturing, it's state capture. And then you say, how did you get to that leap? Like, how did you get to that leap? Because in the electoral act, it literally states there, just go and tell the newspapers, the media, where something that you can track and trace and say, listen, we did this.
Yeah.
We had a press conference. Yeah. We announced that we received a check of $1 million.
Yeah.
Whether it be from Fish or not, we don't know. But we received a check.
Thank God that wasn't me, but go on.
You see, I also exploited a loophole. Whether it be from whatever particular resource.
Yeah.
This is it. Now, here's the discussion. I'm not saying, nor am I sort of like trying to insult the intelligence of many of our listeners. But what people also have to realize is you can see a reality. The law has a reality it also governs. The law doesn't work in an abstract reality that is like the Avengers multiverse situation based on that, which is also something that I also want to correct Angelina. I know that you used Angelina like 100 years later, Helmut, after she made that interview.
Yeah.
But it's also something that people like herself don't realize about the UN.
Yeah.
I always wondered why people thought that the UN should step in and do the role or intervene where a national government is present. And then until the day that I asked the one lady from the UN, the local UN Namibia entity here, and I asked her, listen, why do people think that way, or what do you guys do to intervene in something? And then and then they literally said, no, we are here to help the local government. We give some sort of technical support function.
More like recommendations.
They were not voted for.
Yeah.
So they cannot get involved, in your local country's issues. Yeah. Now, I don't know where people got this idea that the UN is some sort of a direct government functionary. Yeah, maybe your government pays its contributions. Maybe.
And that's another elephant in the room.
Maybe. But we also have to ask another question.
Well, I know ours does pay.
Yeah, ours does pay. Because this was based upon...
it's calculated basically based on your... It's and also your economic size.
And your economic size, yeah. Your GDP size. Yeah. So Namibia pays. But let's, for example, say it's something like Somalia.
Eesh.
Let's say it's something like what's the other country? Let's say it's something like, for example, Djibouti. Or it's something... Did you hear Al-Shabaab popped up once again there in Somalia? Not that it went anywhere, you know. They probably know each other, you know. The Al-Shabaab neighborhood is probably across the street there in Mogadishu. And the pro-government neighborhood is this side of the street, you know. And they were probably like, you know what? You still owe me a football match. And the other guy was like, ah, who cares?
You know, one of the reasons why I have become very lazy to have discussions, especially about terrorist groups these days.
Yeah.
Because
lazy? How much you can't become lazy?
It's more of every time that we have discussion about the terrorist groups, we have been singing the same song. I don't subscribe to the idea that terrorist organizations are just a bunch of deranged, trigger happy guys.
They're not. Oh no, they are M23s. They are Lord's Resistance Army.
Lord's what now?
You remember Joseph Kony?
Oh boy. Look,
I still can't believe he gave himself that kind of a name. Even HD looked at me like, what?
Look, man.
HD, there was a rebel group there in DRC, Rwanda, by the name of Lord's Resistance Army.
Sounds like they are resisting the Lord. But the thing is, the reason why I become somewhat very reluctant to talk about terrorist organizations and their activities popping up left, right, and centers is we rarely talk about who is funding and arming them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if we want to solve that problem, we have to start from there. But then this is something that I have seen from history books. There are a lot of figures from, you know, there are a lot of figures from pretty much every revolution that I could watch a documentary and read, you know, and read on. If you look at Mussolini's Italy or, you know, or Nazi Germany, you can look at all these things. The thing is, they just talk about, you know, this guy, came to power and then did this and this and this and this and this. Mm. Now, but the thing is, they amassed a lot of support from the, from the general population. Now, what I always want to know is, how did they convince an entire population of very, you know, seriously smart people? How did they manage to convince all of these people? There were economic conditions that were created that were exploited by these leaders.
Yeah.
And more often, economic conditions that started with industries or financial institutions or just the big businesses looting the, looting the resources to the point where they created this massive gap between the rich and the poor. Yeah. So the poor became desperate. They started siding with whoever spoke the sweetest words. And, because that's one thing they all have in common. They are very articulate guys. They are that good, and they're very good at pointing out the problems. And when you live in a country that has an ever-widening economic inequality, then the problems become very apparent and very easy to point out.
Yep.
And as a result, you're going to find yourself, when you have an economic environment like that, all it takes is just one wrong guy in the executive office, and you are looking at 10-key tyranny.
Yep.
Now, but the thing is, we just like to look at it from this guy is the bad guy. He came to office.
What kind of tyranny, Helmut? A turnkey.
Turnkey.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
You're welcome.
Just turn the key.
Just,
yeah. From one tyranny to the other one.
It's like.
A dial setting.
Yeah, it's like this economic, these economic disparities, these problems that are created by economic inequalities will just keep piling up to the point where one executive, where one wrong, more like power hungry executive individual steps into office. By the time that they get into that office, they have all the pieces have been, are in place for them to be a dictator.
Yeah.
All the pieces have been in place. And, that's why dictators don't come to office in, you know, they don't just rise to power in 24 hours. They all have a history behind them, and they have a very strong financing base.
Yeah.
And now let's talk about the money part of things, and not the money part of politics. Let's just talk about the money part of energy. Okay, green hydrogen itself, in terms of financing, needs a lot of investment. And a few days ago, our Minister of International Relations and Trade was in China, you know, telling people how strong.
No, she's still there.
She's still there.
Yeah. I also made the same mistake earlier today because I thought the president already flew back, but then I quickly did a report with David.
Yeah.
And then I had to correct myself in the report because I said at the start, yeah, the president is back, and then late at the end.
Yeah.
No, she's still there until the 11th. And I was like,
she's still there until the 11th.
Yeah.
So basically,
the president went with his entourage, mm-hmm. which includes the Minister of International Relations and the Green Hydrogen Program people.
Yeah.
Because China is also expanding into the green hydrogen development. And China is also basically the forerunner of most of the electrolyzer manufacturing.
Of course. They have a very strong R&D.
And our Minister of International Relations is out there talking about, no, we have sunlight.
We are selling the wind, man, the wind. look, the thing is...
sunlight, homie. I'm like, sunlight?
The world is looking for green hydrogen. Namibia is looking at the sun. That's when I was like, you go, Minister, you got this.
You got this.
We have the strongest winds. I'm like, you see, I told you, you are nailing.
No, but I like our minister's positivity. You know, because wherever I've seen Minister Musavina, she's always positive. She's always got this positive demeanor, you know, and it's, you know, I like people like that. It's people that, you can just achieve the biggest of your dreams, Helmut.
And then we went the direction of our green hydrogen program is like, yeah, right, of course. And,
No, guys. We are seriously talking about facts here. We are on factual things here. Look, we are talking facts here.
Look, ever since someone said this very, said these words to me, follow the money.
Yeah.
Whoever funds an institution, whoever funds an organization, whoever funds everything, basically, they stand in a much bigger position to control the status quo, which is why we have breadwinners.
Yeah.
One of the memes I read in December was, in December when it comes to African families, even if you are the firstborn by blood, if you don't have a job and you show up late, they will yell at you. But if you are lastborn and you show up late, and you don't
jobless.
If you have a job and you show up late as a last born, they will apologize for coming early before you arrive.
Now, what happens if you're a firstborn and you show up late but you have a job?
No, as long as you have a job, if you show up late, they will apologize to you.
Oh.
For them, you know, they will apologize for coming in.
No. I don't understand why the last bones must be afforded any particular respect.
I have to pick a bone with last, with last bone.
That's why I'm also doing. I'm also busy picking a bone with last bones.
Shout out last bones. Anyway,
Look, you guys still need to live life.
They have been living life. Look, as firstborns, Dwight, we were the experiments for raising children.
And us, the guys in the middle, we were sort of like, you know, communication channel for the experiments.
We
were the refinement processes, Helmut. We were the electrolyzers. We were the filters. You guys were the point of contact. The rest of us in between, we were filtering the situation.
Yeah, you were filtering when they were raising some of us. They had no clue what they were doing. They were just figuring stuff out. Anyway, where was I?
That's what our green hydrogen is, guys. Just religion.
No, our green hydrogen discussion in China.
Yeah.
It's a very good point to put out there, because one of the things that's pointed out by the International Energy Agency in the 2026 Green Hydrogen Review is investment.
Mm.
Yeah. And, we have, ties, you know, trade ties and basically diplomatic relations with China. So, taking the ideas there is a good idea. But, here's one question I just can't help asking you, asking myself. But, we have, we have a very good sunshine exposure and we have fairly strong winds. And now our green hydrogen environment, or let me just say our green energy transition environment, especially in reference to green hydrogen, is predominantly, is basically dominated by the Europeans in terms of investment.
Yeah.
I would just find it very interesting how the two, will basically compete for space and investment. The two, I'm talking about China here, because I'm sitting there going, okay, these are private companies. Maybe they can work together, but there's one thing that will not get out of the way.
Mm.
The politics.
No, it's not. No, it won't. Not. It will never happen.
Yeah.
It's on such a level. Yes. Politicians still have a key role to play with it. Okay. If you're living in Peter Thiel's reality.
Oh,
politicians
no.
are not there. I'm sorry, guys. But unless you know who Peter Thiel is.
Peter Thiel is nuts.
Yeah, Hamid. Until you told me about his buddy, and then I realized he and his buddy together are not just nuts. They are literally deranged.
Alex Karp?
Yeah, the guy that wrote the document that scared you.
The
document with what? How many points?
A 24-point manifesto. They put it on their X page.
They put it on their other Crazy Bras page. Website.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, this is something I think the Indian External Affairs Minister, Jai Shankar, said about, I believe that was about George Soros, that he's not just opinionated, he's opinionated and dangerous. But here's the thing. This is the thing that you find in a lot of people that has power. Now, anyone that is basically a filthy rich, like you have people like George Soros. I don't pay much attention to what he does. I know he's involved a lot in the, he's involved a lot with NGOs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm more paying attention to rich guys that are in tech, because tech is gain. Tech is spreading all across, all across the spheres of our lives. So I always want to find out and understand who is in charge. And then the closer I look at people like Alex Karp, Alex Karp and Peter Thiel, the more I realize, okay, you know what? It's not the the technology is not the problem. It's who's running the technology, who is literally nuts.
And now the ideas that they are getting, since everybody is now paying for their tech and loves their tech and their product, and now suddenly you have to start hearing about how the human race needs to be controlled. Can't you just be, for once, just be a quiet, silent billionaire? Now we need to hear, like, for example, with Bill Gates and his antics. Bill Gates that's now become in the US the largest private land owner. And then if the people go interrogate why, he wants to control and run the American food industry alongside Mondelez. Then you sit there thinking, dude, do you have nothing to do? Don't you want to go and experiment on Pluto or something?
No, I think it's something that comes with a lot of money and power.
Yes,
yeah.
It really does.
Something that comes with a lot of money and power.
You are right. It does come with a lot of money and power. I mean, Bill Gates has Namibia's GDP, and you can multiply it into infinity even. What's his name? The richest African who denies that he's an African. But we all know he's an African because his dad is an MP for the DA in South Africa. Elon Musk believes he needs to outbreed the rest of the world. Oh yes, that's one of his insane ideas, guys. He's literally an African championing an African value on an international platform. Did you hear that he was also offering his genes to rich friends?
He's right.
These rich guys, they do weird stuff, bro.
Yeah, I think that's one interesting thing about money and power on that level. It's like you run out of things to do with it. And now, look.
Definitely they do.
Yeah, they have just run out of things to do with it, because that's why I now, one fascinating idea about the whole idea of colonizing Mars, for example, and energy transition. The reason why I subscribe to the energy transition, just in general, not just in modes of transport, is that energy transition for me makes sense, because we are talking about saving the planet we are on.
Mm.
But if you are talking about colonizing Mars because Earth is dying, even if Mars was as green as the equatorial rainforest, you don't think running there will just be you creating the very same problem that ended up ruining the atmosphere on this planet to Mars?
Mm-hmm.
You first have to figure out, okay, if the Earth's atmosphere is heating up, why? What are we doing? Except we don't want to have those discussions, because every time that we talk about, okay, you know what, let's talk about energy transition, let's talk about green hydrogen investment, adoption, and all these things. The companies that make money from chemicals that basically cause this issue that we would like to transition from, they're not going to stand there and say, you know what, we agree with you. And we have seen this with the, you know, or we have seen this with the, you know, with the, more of an international collab to regulate the production of plastic, plastic usage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time that convention is held, it was held in 2024. It was held in South Korea. The companies representing fossil fuel guys were just, they would not hear any of it. Now, the companies that are, the individuals that mostly came from individual, from environmental lobby groups.
Yeah.
Now they were talking about, you know what, let's just cut the production, because we know what the problem is. This is not rocket science. It's simple. Plastics are causing issues like crazy, especially and they're very specific, especially carriage bags.
Yeah, and microplastics.
Now we have now garbage patches the size of islands scattered all across the world ocean. So the problem is obvious. The solution is figure out an alternative form of carriage materials. And we have seen a lot of, I mean, even here in Namibia, we have, you know, we have paper bag type of carriage. Yeah. Now, I know when I say paper bag, my people will start thinking about my Rondopi, not that one. It's a different bag. You need a reference, man. Now,
What did I say, Helmut?
Myron.
Myron.
Myron Dopi.
What is that?
It literally translates to where is it going to climb? As in, we don't have space for this thing in the car because it's too big. So we're going to put it.
Myron Dopi. Now, what does it have to do with a paper bag?
The thing is, paper bag, especially for a lot of people from my region, especially my part of the constituency, when you say paper bag, they're thinking about a whole different type of bag, not one that's literally made out of paper.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, so we have, now there's one grocery store I think we're all aware of even here in Namibia. When you go shopping there, you get a literal paper bag.
Mm.
It's made out of, it's made out of paper.
Mm.
So, that would be an excellent idea, except,
and you pay for it.
Yeah. Except when environmental representatives were talking about, cutting the manufacturing, the manufacturing because it's the main problem, the representatives of oil, of oil giants kept saying absolutely not. So, why? It's because you can imagine that's a multi-billion dollar industry on its own.
Mm.
So, if it makes money, we are not moving away from it anytime soon.
Yes.
Yeah. And that is why it took, over a century, if not more than that, to end slavery. People were literally selling people, and they found ways to defend it because they were making money off of it. And the fact that we are basically fighting to transition for energy transition, this is not new. One thing that's basically traceable all throughout history, especially when it comes to people, is when we figure out a money-making mechanism, even if we are told it's bad for the environment, we'll just keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, who wouldn't? The plastic convention discussion was held in South Korea in 2024. They postponed it because they could not reach a unanimous consensus because, environmental representatives were saying, let's stop production. And the oil representative guys were saying, let's limit production. And then they could not reach a unanimous consensus. So it was shifted to somewhere around November, December in Switzerland last year. It did not happen again. It didn't. Yeah. So, you have this whole main discussion we have here is, we know what the problems are. We know what the solutions are. But the solutions literally cost the global economy a heck of a lot of money. Which means the implementation is going to take, and actually that's the good part of this whole, the whole transition. It's a gradual process. Because we can all agree that if you did it in 24 hours at the press of a button, you'd collapse the global economy. And you end up with the Hunger Games on your hands.
I don't think we'll begin to Okay. Wait. How isn't Hunger Games based upon governments that went to a war situation that real erupted into a nuclear... It's literally like a fallout situation.
No, I'm talking about not the beginning part of Hunger Games, like the what happens to society when everything is in disarray type of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because usually my idea of when society is in disarray, I think of Mad Max.
Oh no, that's worse.
But that's water and oil.
Yeah.
It's actually funny.
It is funny. It's my favorite part in that movie.
Which one? The new one or the first three of Mel Gibson?
No, the first three.
Ah.
Yeah. So, why is it difficult and very painful to have discussions like, the discussions that have investment in it?
Mm.
Because that brings a lot of questions in relation to Africa's participation.
Mm.
Yeah. When you talk about anything else, Africa is at the top of the chart, but when you bring up investment, it's a whole different discussion. we can come up with a plan. Okay, you know what? This is electric cars discussion all over again. And the a report by the International Energy Agency, they also did a report which we talked about on this topic. Now, in their electric vehicles report, one thing they looked at was where the new markets are emerging, and where the which part of this of this whole new technology is on demand in terms of participating for economic purposes, and that was the battery technology.
Yeah.
And then the battery technology and the charging technology. The battery in terms of extending its longevity and and basically power, and the charging for the charging technology is about how to make it charge faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are now. So you are looking at, you can either participate in in R&D or manufacturing of the car as a whole, or the battery technology, or the charging technology. Right now, these three are topping the chart.
Mm.
We're not participating in either. In R&D.
Well, we're also not participating in who is using the hydrogen.
Which is why I referenced that. So yeah. every time we have a discussion that talks about, that has the word investment in it, we are all looking to the global north. And when we borrow money, we bring that money here, and we know how we do it, steal the money, send it back there for storage, buy iPhones with 2 SIM cards, and we just, we meet every February and start talking about how can we make Africa better. Really?
Or we go and tell Italy, start putting your money where your words are.
That coming from an African who will never get old.
Yeah. Basically.
So, investment. And also for, there are only two ways to have this discussion. Whether it's the electric car, electric car report from the IEA, or the Green Hydrogen Review. There are only two ways to have this discussion on, from an African perspective. And that's one, emerging market, because we don't manufacture much of the technology that we use. Take cars, for example. If the change in the internal combustion engine with regards to the energy that it requires to run is changed in Japan or Europe, all we can do is adopt.
Yeah. It won't even be a discussion, Hamid, of how do we approach the participation in industrial perspective.
Yeah.
Because obviously the companies that exist today will have the means of adoption and adaptation the easiest to achieve because they have the money,
yeah,
the jobs, the political lobbying capability,
yeah,
to basically just go from a combustion engine to a hydrogen engine.
Yeah.
Now I read over the weekend, there's this one, a website that speaks primarily about hydrogen developments, and it recently spoke about at one particular sort of like industrial fair how hydrogen fuel cells are slightly more expensive than a hydrogen combustion engine, and I was like, okay, because of with a fuel cell one, it's literally almost, it looks almost like a battery that is filled with this hydrogen.
Yeah.
Whereas the hydrogen combustion one is literally like, you understand your conventional engine today, you know, it's moving part. Okay. Not moving parts, as I was told, but it's literally, it ignites the fuel source, through the pistons and all that.
Okay.
Cause this action that I'm doing is basically the piston action.
The pistons moving.
Yeah. So the research and development is happening in such levels now. We don't see it here in the forefront. We don't hear about it easily unless these companies and their research developments basically announce and release their works. You also don't get to see primarily how the technology is functioning in action. How it moves, how it transports you from point A to point B. how it basically performs under certain stress functions.
In certain environments.
And under certain environments, under certain temperature conditions. For example, the engine that Porsche developed that runs, that can run on hydrogen. I just don't know if it's a hydrogen fuel cell or if it's a hydrogen combustion engine. So they tested a prototype Porsche helmet, a SUV prototype,
mm-hmm.
in the Chilean desert.
Hey.
Now the facility that manufactures the hydrogen fuel, is in Chile. Then BMW went and tested another hydrogen powered SUV. What was that? Where was that? Also in somewhere here in Eastern Europe, as well, under different conditions. Remember now, Porsche took it to a desert, extreme heat.
Yeah.
BMW took their SUV, which is an X, it was either an X5 or an X3, hydrogen prototype. They took it now to other particular conditions to go test it. So we will now start seeing more and more of these particular research and development initiatives happening. Hydrogen engines being tested more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's not to say that I don't want to see the Toyota Land Cruiser Paki now feature a hydrogen version of it featuring now in a Yemen war somewhere. But
yes.
That's what I'm saying. I just don't know if that same manifestation will occur, but we can slowly but surely now start seeing that the technology will creep in again. Yes, Hyundai itself also said that they will now start looking into hydrogen engines. They were also testing a fuel cell or a combustion engine.
Mm-hmm.
Toyota is already with an engine and a fully functional commercial car already. Hyundai is not yet. But it doesn't say that Hyundai will not get there, even though you and I, we did that Namport strategy with the Korean government. The green shipping. And when we looked into that particular discussion, that MOU that Namport signed with that Korean ministry, we realized basically that Korea has been at the forefront for the past 10 years of green shipping. That the Koreans have been manufacturing hydrogen engines for ships already.
Hydrogen engines for ships will be an. That's one interesting transition.
I mean, the shipbuilding is one of the key things specifically to look after your trade. Meaning, you can send ships, these are private companies, but you can send a fleet, like what Russia does now with its shadow fleet of oil tankers. You can send a fleet of these goods, and whoever wants to buy obviously gets it at a discounted price as long as you get the stone cold hard cash on delivery immediately. So, yeah.
Oh, you're done. Oh.
Yeah.
Let's get to Africa now, shall we?
Oh, boy.
Okay, two factors that, two things that you have to look at. The first one is when Africa is participating, at least that's one thing that I have learned from a lot of reports that we've gone through, especially those ones that are talking about global initiatives. When you look at it from an African perspective, it's very likely to fall within the category of either an emerging market. You are just talking about from a predominantly from a consumer perspective, because you can look at it from a research and development standpoint. There's not much going on in that department with regards to this technology, and this is not just a green hydrogen. This is just the world over. And then you bring up now, and then you look at two factors. Factor number one, like you always like to put it, the brains are here.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we are sending these brains to go and, to go and do this research and development, basically acquire this knowledge on different subjects in universities that are outside Africa. And most of these institutions are private institutions. So they have terms and conditions with regards to what, research information leaves their institutions, even if you are the one that's conducting the research.
Yeah.
So that information then is acquired, gathered by individuals that you are sending and paying a heck of a lot of money in foreign currency to study this. When they come here, they need permission for them to reference their work. Now, when it comes to research and development on the African continent, we still have a long way to go. For the most part, we still have a long way to go. But just from the report itself, Africa, like you saw with the America First Global Health Strategy. The United States, their national security strategy. Africa is on the last page, right?
Mm.
Yeah, well, so is this report. Africa is way in the last page. Now, not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for a lot of reasons, the first one being I'm a comedian. I find everything funny. Now, on page 212 of the International Energy Agency Green Hydrogen Review for 2026, hydrogen uses in Africa reached 3.1 metric tons in 2024, about 3% of the global total. Hydrogen production accounted for about 6% of the region's gas demand and 2% of regional carbon dioxide emission. Now, hydrogen use is concentrated in 6 countries out of 54. With Egypt representing nearly half, followed by Algeria with 20%, Nigeria with 17%, South Africa with 5%, and believe it or not, Libya with 5%, and Equatorial Guinea with 3%.
Mm. Equatorial of all.
Yeah.
And all of them are oil-producing countries.
The irony,
because the executive summary of this report basically also starts with, you know what, Middle East again... Block plus block equals unblock. And then you realize, what are you talking about? That the global hydrogen strategy and developments are also impacted by this war. Oh, no, it's fertilizer for your food. It's chemicals produced from the various other particular activities. And then I can remember, it's the various labels, Helmut, of for example, like what we call green hydrogen.
Yeah.
It's because it's wind and solar being used.
Yeah, it's generated, it's produced from... renewable sources of energy.
So an energy source is used to split the water molecule into oxygen and the hydrogen.
Yeah.
And then I realized, the Qataris, the UAE, the Emiratis, the Bahrainis,
the Omanians,
they were basically using oil to do hydrogen projects.
Yeah.
They were burning their oil and their gas to make hydrogen products.
Yeah.
The same particular hydrogen products that we obviously want to achieve in Namibia. Because one of the easiest things to use, whereby we can use the green hydrogen, was to also produce the green ammonia through the Haber-Bosch process. And the Haber-Bosch process is apparently an accidental
discovery.
Yeah, of ammonia. And then ammonia was now the global
thing
for... household use.
It was one of those very amazing breakthrough because when Haber what now?
Haber-Bosch.
Okay, thank you. Mm. Now,
it's so easy, Helmut, because it's two people, it's two scientists.
You see, now that breakthrough.
Not in terms, like your Vaseline.
In terms of manufacturing, can you just leave my Vaseline?
also, not like Marie Curie.
Yeah, no, that one poisoned herself and then her husband.
I wonder what the kids would have looked like.
Turns out uranium. Oh, come on, man! Yeah. Stop thinking. Have you seen Wrong Turn?
Chernobyl.
Now the ammonia production on large scale for fertilizer purposes using the Haber-Bosch process was a brilliant breakthrough at the very right time because that was in the middle of the world searching for alternative, for a lot of fertilizer for commercial use, not just substance use.
Yeah. Instead of waiting for us to go to the toilet and then go and harvest that, but
they had a war over bird poop in South America because of fertilizer. That's still my favorite war. That and the one that started over a bucket.
What kind of a bucket?
Just an ordinary bucket.
A war that started over a bucket.
Oh, man, I will walk you through it. Now, the things people fight over. But anyway, coming back to the report, the last part of the last sentence in the of the part that I read, spills into the fertilizer discussion as one of the byproduct of the green hydrogen industry.
Mm.
That ammonia production, this is now in Africa, ammonia production accounted for nearly 3/4 of hydrogen demand. So, I think, this for me points into us really, we should begin to take this serious.
Yeah.
Because not only it's basically it's looking at replacing fossil fuel in a lot of ways than just modes of transport.
Mm.
Yeah, in the very same way that fossil fuel produces a lot of products, crude oil when it's refined, and this is very basic grade 10 physical science, the fractional distillation of crude oil.
No, Helmut, I was not in that grade 10 class like that you were in. I'll tell you today.
Really?
Yeah. No, really.
No, now, the thing is, think of it, how do I put this? Okay, do you know what Kachpembe is?
What, Helmut?
You don't know what Ombike is?
No, I know. But those things you saw in your house.
Think of it, except when you are making Ombike, that's a terrible example because what you are doing is, you are basically condensing the fume. Because of the low boiling point of alcohol.
Mm.
In comparison to water.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, the fractional distillation of crude oil, think of it as a very tall tank.
Mm.
And this tall tank has a different, outlet pipes, popping on basically.
Is it like what the bootleg documentary guys are doing?
So, what's that?
There's this documentary but it's like a series that Discovery once had about moonshine distillers in the US.
Oh, yeah, that.
Now, I could understand why they have multiple outlet pipes.
Yeah,
but it's literally as the distillation process is taking place at multiple levels.
Look, it's called crude oil for a reason, because it's a combination of a lot of different chemicals.
Yeah.
I mean, your diesel comes from there, your petrol comes from there, your paraffin comes from there, your kerosene, and also basically paraffin, kerosene, same as subgroup to some degree.
Mm.
But the thing is, when crude oil is extracted from the ground, it's literally cooked. The thing is, as it heats up, different chemicals that makes up this whole single gooey evaporates at different temperatures, and it's collected in different containers.
Oh, so what people have to think about is just add heat, but look at multiple collection chambers.
For multiple
products, which is basically what the Power X is trying to achieve.
That's why I'm saying, if you look at green hydrogen as an alternative source of fuel to crude oil, it is in a lot of ways very similar
in application.
Processing and application.
Yeah, but because, just where you get the resource from.
Yeah,
and the byproducts of that resource.
Thank God you don't have to drill the earth. No.
Thank God.
Yeah. Now,
or burn another fuel to achieve another fuel. I still don't understand those guys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can see it from block equals unblock. It's the same thing. Now, the thing is, crude oil, when it's being distilled, chemicals are going to come out at different temperatures. and they are collected differently.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens when the, you know, the same thing happens with gases. The, you know, like your, okay, our atmosphere is about 70% hydrogen. Is it hydrogen? No, nitrogen. It's about 70% nitrogen.
But isn't it a nitrogen-oxygen mix helmet?
Yeah, it's nitrogen. You have yeah, it's about 70% nitrogen, about 21% oxygen.
And then the rest.
Yeah, then you have you know,
and carbon dioxide,
other carbon dioxide and yeah, carbon dioxide and other gases.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then argon is even the in between.
Yeah, those ones are the most stubborn. But
and then you realize argon is also deadly by itself. But yeah.
Oh, chemicals are very nice to mix. And also very dangerous. Now, when you look at the production and the application of green hydrogen, it's basically it's basically replacing not just in forms of modes of transport fossil fuels, but it's also replacing fossil fuels in fertilizer production. Hence, the ammonia. That the ammonia that was used more like that created a large portion of the green hydrogen products demand just in Africa. So this is a type of technology that is still emerging, which means we can participate.
Yeah,
it's still emerging. It's not as refined yet, at least in comparison to the in comparison to crude oil, but. You do that first.
Yeah, we'll quickly take a short break, dear listeners, and we come back right after. Velvici University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences. For the following programs, Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur, Level 6. For the Certificate in Pharmacy, Level 5. For the Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences, Level 6. For the Bachelor of Social Work Honours. For the Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvica University, where everyone is an achiever.
Welcome back. Now we can continue. So there are a lot of things that we could be participating in, but when you look at it as it unfolds, we are more likely going to end up in the very same situation in terms of participating into the manufacturing process. We're going to end up in the same situation we are with crude oil, where we congratulate one Nigerian for building a refinery because it's not one that we know to happen a lot on the continent. Except we do have a lot of refineries on this continent.
And then just for that same Nigerian's refinery, basically to say, well, your fuel is not going to be cheaper.
Yeah.
We buy it at the same price as anybody else.
Even though I just drove it across the street. Now, that's just a pure greed and politics at play.
Which basically means it's the ministers of energy at OPEC.
Yeah.
Basically.
They basically corner the market and they'll tell you, okay, congratulations on your refinery, but you still have to stick to our
For me price. To make me my money, you need to sign on to this line and stick at this oil price.
Yeah. Well, we have this market that we have been supplying and we don't want you coming to disturb it. Mm-hmm. I thought the idea was making things affordable.
Mm.
It turns out, no. We're not making things affordable.
We're just
making money.
Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
How affordable or unaffordable things become.
Yeah. Now, the status of hydrogen and government strategies today, that's just on Africa. Just decided to zone in on Africa. And your Namibia and right next to Morocco and Algeria are on page 218. Now, let's look at our wind that we've been selling to China now, shall we?
I would leave the auntie alone. I told you she's positive, you know. There's positive outlooks. Besides the wind and the sun.
Besides the wind and the sun.
Besides the wind and the sun.
Yeah. Namibia's strategy depicts a long vision centered around development of three renewable hydrogen valleys across the country. Despite not having any hydrogen demand today, the ambition of the strategy is to produce 1 to 2 metric tons of renewable hydrogen in 2030, ramping up to 10 to 15 metric tons in 2050, driven by ammonia and synthetic fuel and iron exports.
Mm.
Hence our, when I read that line, I was like, oh, hence our high iron, investment so far.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, some of us are investing by faith. Yeah, those that are investing by, Americans, Europeans, they will invest with money. Africans will just, our thoughts and prayers. You got this.
We show up for the buffet.
With Oxford level English and a very nice suit.
Yes, guys, that's what we do.
Look, whatever we're smoking, I really recommend we pump some brakes on it. But anyway, to achieve this this would require an electrolyzer capacity of 10 gigawatts by 2030, increasing to 128 gigawatts by 2028. What's the first thing that comes in your mind when you hear the word electrolyzer? As for me, I hear Siemens.
Well, the thing is, this report also speaks about a worrying thing that I saw last year. That the Chinese were basically also ramping up to try and make electrolyzers as more affordable as possible. Because the Europeans were also developing their own electrolyzers.
Yeah.
Which is the same discussion, remember when we did the solar panel discussion back in 2024?
Yeah. The mass import.
Yeah. How Africa is rather pivoting to China for the cheaper equipment and infrastructure.
Yeah.
But then you also see, okay, but it's because the Europeans and their accounting is just weird and everything is just in euros.
Mm-hmm.
But the Chinese can literally, bring your economies of scale, which usually is your currency and your price tag, down to a level which can accommodate you. Now, a scenario like that basically speaks to, we've got to try and understand. For example, where would the electrolyzer come from, let's say, for an EU-funded green hydrogen project?
I would say Germany.
You would assume that.
Mm-hmm.
Until you go in here, those guys went also there to the international market to look for international equipment on industrial scale, and they bought from China.
Yeah.
Or like one of the photos in when President Nandin Daitwa last year pushed the button for the Oshivela green iron or high iron project to switch on the one machine. Eh? And
the lead
engineer is from China.
Well, didn't I tell you that? I did. I'll just retell you anyway.
The lead engineers from China anyway. So the skill sets would also probably come from the same economy, primarily where President Nandin Daitwa currently is.
Zimbabwe refined its first or processed its first lithium.
Yeah.
Yes, that's how it is on paper until you look up at the company that did the refining, the Chinese company. And they're going like, sure. We're very good at taking, but look,
it's like Coca-Cola with its bottling and canning facility in Namibia, and then we say, no, Coke is made in Namibia. And then,
no, it's not.
And then you say, no, it technically is.
You see, that's the thing. Technically
it is. It's bottled here, and it's, the thing is made here.
Yeah.
But when you look at where the product comes from. It doesn't come from Namibia. Yes, the truck drove from Namibia to go deliver, let's say, for example, wherever. But where does the product originate from? The product comes from the US. It's a 200-year-old product. It's not a Namibian product. Yes, it's through the benevolence of the economic system, yes, that everybody can now drink and consume the same product. But still, when you look at it, okay, there might be a slight difference between Coke made in Namibia and Coke made in South Africa. Slight difference.
In terms of ingredients used, the amount of sugar? Or...
It's the taste function. But here's the thing, Helmut. You can drive from the side of the country. Let's say you just walk across the bridge in Zambezi into Zambia.
Yeah.
The Coke there will taste different.
I never really thought of that.
It's also how I discovered that the black label in Zambia tastes different from the black label in Zimbabwe. It's the only beer I could tolerate. I couldn't take the Zambian options anymore. I just couldn't. They were just horrible. I'm sorry if you're Zambian, but you guys should just stick to your daytime job and not make beer.
Come on, man. It was just your taste buds.
Because really,
yeah,
they would sell the same brand here in Zambia and the same brand in Zimbabwe, but then you find out the thing tastes completely different,
totally different
in the two countries that border onto each other. But from the scenario of how we obviously look at, what's that thing's name? Supply channels and channel management and component manufacturing or something in that sense. Globalization, Helmut, still takes place in a dimension where we have now, in the past 3 years, thought that globalization technically would fall apart.
Yeah.
For example, the block plus block equals unblock basically resulted in how the Iranian football team got treated at the World Cup.
Oh, that was horrible.
Yeah. It also led primarily to how us Africans can fly to the US, for example. I mean, no Namibian has $300,000 just lying around for the US dollar equivalent of the visa, that short-term holiday visa situation that got announced last year.
Yeah.
No one has got that money for the US. But when you look at what immediately happens in terms of just the how to... The repurposing of demand. So I'm talking like, for example, like with tourism.
Mm-hmm.
The tourists who thought they could go to the US continuously and as often as possible pre-Trump now realize, okay, let me divert my ticket money
and my
hotel money somewhere else. Now we're hearing about tourists driving around on people's farms, like in Namibia. They just decided to go for a drive about, you know, not a walk about. Like the one guy that with the NTB thing where us journalists were taken to that, you know, cultural tourism thing, north and south. A group went north. I went with a group that went north and a group that went south. And before we drove, I spoke to the one tour guide for the southern group. He said the previous week he almost got into serious trouble in the south of Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy also from the south of Namibia, mm-hmm. from the Keetmanshoop, between Keetmanshoop and Marintal area. And he said that the Italian tourists he had the previous week, the Italian tourists just wanted him to continuously drive onto people's private property. And he said it seemed like the Europeans don't understand the idea of private property in a Namibian context. Private property usually comes with gunpowder and the mechanism that fires the gunpowder and the projectile out of it the other end.
Yeah.
Meaning it's usually Wild West justice templates that take place. And the tourists just wanted him to drive into people's farms and properties and stuff.
Well, just tell them that's not how things work here.
No, the guy kept saying that.
Yeah.
The tourist basically was what he was partially narrating was that it seemed like the tourists said, you are giving me an all access tour of your country.
All access?
Yeah. Since I hired you, you take me wherever I want to go. So scenarios like that pop up because of the antics since last year into this year that keep cascading, which also now are the antics of 28 February that we now see happening with like the global hydrogen position. What is interesting to see, Helmut, is that they say, a lot more projects have reached final investment decision realm, which means things that were in the pipeline have now moved from pipeline status to now technically being now for sure projects to be constructed.
Yeah.
and that any new projects coming online or coming into a pipeline, for example, are lesser. So this means that when you and I spoke about like engines and fuel cells and stuff like that, it means we are now getting into the next phase of things. Now, I've got to stress here, once again, dear listeners, Namibia's green hydrogen scenario is obviously championed by the EU. Japan is definitely behind a hydrogen-based energy economy somewhere. We can now see, because it's also mentioned in this report. Basically, this report says this stems from a ministerial-level policy-making aspect. And I was like, which ministries? And it's basically Japan front and center, which technically means, since Japan is not a country that produces oil, they want to go where their technology basically will be for their benefit. South Korea is basically also pivoting in this direction. China will pivot in this direction. Russia will pivot in this direction. Just to let you know, they will pivot, Helmut.
They have already, if you look at it from a research and development standpoint.
No, no, because I saw an actual hydrogen car like this in 2024. The car is silent. But that was a fuel cell car. It wasn't the one about the engine, with the engine.
The thing is, when it comes to technology, when a new form of technology shows up in the scientific community, investors line up for the next potential dominating type of technology that will enable them to make money. That's pretty much the exact same thing that happened with the shift from the steam engine to the internal combustion engine, aka one that uses gas. And now that this transition is happening, the people that are looking beyond beyond what I'm gonna drink this weekend. These are the people that are taking a lot of their money and pouring it into research and development, of alternative fuel sources from fossil fuels. Now, as a result, obviously, as in everything else, the people that have deep pockets will scatter their investment, more like the better odds you stand of, having one or two scores in terms of your returns.
Yeah.
Again, when we talk about any of this from an African standpoint, it's difficult to talk about it from a manufacturing perspective. It's difficult to talk about it. It's not impossible. It's difficult because you only have a very minor participation, and even those, and I'm using the word difficult because even the minor participations, like the, like the use that I just pointed out, the use in terms of green hydrogen energy and fertilizer. That was used in 2024, 2025 on the African continent. The manufacturing and the supply and much of the trade of all these products taking place on the African continent is either directly or indirectly funded by either North Americans, Europeans, the Chinese, or the Japanese.
Yeah.
So, when you look at the money, when you just look at the money, you'll understand just how little we are doing in terms of research and development. And not just research and development, but also manufacturing. So that's why the only wider scope of looking at manufacturing, it's not on the African continent. When you talk about emerging markets, that's when we come up a lot. As consumers, not participants, which is not a good picture. So when you look at it from manufacturing on the African continent, little though it may be, I'm not thrilled much about that. Not because I'm not proud of my continent or my country. It's who is funding. Because I know whoever is funding is the one that's going to run the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now a lot of countries are investing in this technology right now. And we are just here, debating some other things. When the technology is perfected, we become consumers once again. And a lot of the investors that poured a lot of their money into strengthening these industries on our continent, in our respective countries, will start dictating either through lobbying groups or directly by bribing politicians to change laws in their favor. Then we start shouting, pan-Africanism. No, man, that's not how it's supposed to work. If you want to run your economy, pay for it.
The paying part is still...
Yeah, look, you can't run around asking people for money, and when they start influencing your policies, you start claiming, you know, it's a capture. They're taking over over my country. You took their money.
That's exactly the thing, Albert, because the paying part is the difficult part. The paying part is literally the difficult part.
Yeah, it would be easy if we weren't stealing.
Okay, let me rephrase before your reaction.
Okay.
You can still decide if you want to react the same with the same statement.
Okay.
For example, the president is currently right now inviting the Chinese private sector to come and invest more in Namibia. But what's in it for them? That's the first particular point.
The key word you used there is investment. So we know it's an investment that we are inviting, not a donation. So we have got, you know, there's something that's in it for them. Because we have to be clear on that.
Yeah.
If we are aware of that part, please continue.
But what was Minister Musavi's words that you highlighted also in the same scenario? Wind and sun.
Yeah.
Now, just, what was it, 2 weeks back when we highlighted the ratio of 29,000 to 1,000, 29,000 jobs in the green hydrogen sector to the 1,000 that the VTCs can currently produce, which obviously means it's a 29 to 1 ratio, basically, which highlights that companies who need Namibians with the skill sets to participate have to go pay more money to import someone else from somewhere. Motivated to home affairs over here and immigration, why they are bringing in a foreigner to do the job temporarily because they have work to do.
Mm-hmm.
The work cannot stand still. They need to make money because there's just a few Namibians who can do the work, because you can't pay one Namibian five salaries working at five different companies at the same exact time.
That is also for the sake of their sanity.
That's also for the sake of their public health and personal health.
Yeah.
Now, that particular dimension is also something primarily that the Namibian government has to realize they've got to step up things with. That they literally have to accelerate skills developments from the vocational and training sector of Namibia. Not just from the universities. But I now throw the ball back in our hands as Namibians.
Yeah.
Hamoud, we wanted industrialization.
We still do.
We still do.
Yeah.
But we wanted it for 30 years before green hydrogen showed up. Wanted it for 30 years.
That's because we've been praying for it instead of putting money into it.
Exactly. And this unicorn just kept running past us. We knew this unicorn exists.
Yeah.
We knew it. We don't have the potential to go and colonize someone else.
And I don't want us to.
We don't have that potential. But the downside was also we didn't step up to the plate. One of the particular things is, Helmut, industrialization will come through now if you decentralize development. Meaning, if instead of just having a ministry that decides for Keetmanshoop, what Keetmanshoop must spend money on to empower businesses. Because Keetmanshoop every year has to submit its budget to Ministry of Urban and Rural Development. But Kidmans is also probably one of those local authorities, like many other local authorities outside of Windhoek, that don't make enough money for it to basically ramp up its development agenda.
Yeah.
We've also known, because City of Windhoek keeps mentioning it, they subsidize basically the development of all the other local authorities in the country. So the discussion from that is also something of looking at, the regional authorities, the regions, have their own regional councils. Each regional council has extension divisions from each ministry. So if MASAC has here at Government Office Park, their office, there would be an extension office in Hartap who has to coordinate with headquarters here. But they basically form part of the governor's responsibility. Helmut, I realized back in last year, just before that local and regional authority elections, now, that if politics pivots to being politics for good for us all, now, we won't need to talk about money. All we would need to do is talk about innovation and the ability to achieve goals. But now I have to ask you, Helmut, okay, yes, a country like Japan had to colonize somebody. Sure, that's the worst template to try and emulate. It's the worst template to emulate. But then you also sit with a discussion that the internet is basically the resource that you just need to plug in, switch on a light, switch on the screen, and voila, there we go. You can watch a tutorial. What is so wrong?
Nothing is wrong.
Nothing is wrong.
Yeah.
And then here's the downside, which technically might motivate and back up your statement of as long as we don't steal something. We can still borrow money. Because,
we can.
Because money borrowed by the public sector, by the government, basically factors in as a stimulation of the local economy, which Minister Sankwasa said literally himself as well. And this has nothing to do with town planning, with land, with reaching rural. No, it's got nothing to do with those things, guys. We're literally staying on a scenario of saying, listen, to bring into reality that one manifesto that when said a factory in every constituency situation, which is a bit far-fetched, but... It's a bit far-fetched, but if those industrial activities were coordinated around the administrative capitals of each region in Namibia, you would have seen real industrial activity then just proliferate. But since we do have exact templates of an empty garment factory in Nkurunkuru, and we know that 90% of Nkurunkuru's population works for the government, they definitely won't have a side hustle as a seamstress in that garment factory, Hamud. And we have an exact template of a volunteer workforce at a tannery who owns the input nohal. I've never heard of a workforce that owns literally the raw material going into the factory. I've never heard of this, Hamud.
That's because you have never heard of a lot of volunteers.
Working for a company.
Look, a man gotta eat.
Somehow.
If he's working without you paying him and he keeps showing up, you have to you have to ask yourself one question. How is he showing up? Because
he's healthy.
And happy.
Yeah, and happy.
And he happened to have the, you know, when did that report come out?
We did that one last year at the start of the year. But it came out in the previous year of 2024.
Now, according to that report.
Because they had to go, they gave recommendations in 2023.
Yeah.
And they came back at the end of 2024.
Yeah.
And then the report was released in 2025 because the new administration had to take, you know, the new parliament and the new people had to be sworn in.
Yeah.
And these guys had to hand over all work that they did in the National Assembly. Yeah. And then the report was one of those tranche of reports.
You're like, you know what? This is what we were working on.
This is what we finished up. Here you go. Thank you. Yeah. Goodbye. And then we saw the report only last year.
Now, when they went there in 2023, they found a cow hide that was fresh.
Yeah.
And when they went back in 2024, towards the end of the year, they found the cow hide still fresh.
Yeah.
That means it's either someone is using those machines as a way of paying themselves, or we have immortal cowhide.
Yeah.
One of these two.
Yes.
Which I'm not going with the first, you know, I'm not going with the second one because that one doesn't make sense. I'm going with the, you know, I'm going with the first one, not because I'm accusing them of anything. I'm just saying that's exactly what I would do. If I was heavy, you know, if I had to show up every day and, this is a manufacturing facility and has all this equipment that you can use to, I mean, it's like me showing up at the Eagle FM every day and here are all these microphones and this very nice sound system. Sooner or later, I would just turn on the mic and start making noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
it's not like we are making noise.
Look,
guys,
if people are listening and they keep throwing me compliments, of course I'm gonna continue.
No, Helmut. No, Helmut.
Look.
No, Helmut. No. No.
And the compliments are awesome.
Yeah.
Look. Yes, energy transition. We showed up in 2015 in Paris for the Paris Climate Agreements, and then we signed up for this and all that. But there's one thing that you know, there's one thing that you guys pointed out in the previous discussion, and that is the part of when you extend the boundaries of an urban area. You are changing, you know, you are changing a lot of things with regards to property ownership in the regions that fall within the borders of your extensions.
Yeah.
Now, what that means is, what that means to me is a lot of consultations are needed. When it comes to and we saw this unfold in Kurenkuru in terms of ownership and the registrations of deeds and all these things. Oh, when I tell you we need a lot of consultations, believe me, we need a whole lot when it comes to property ownership, in a sense of, you know, in a way of the Western, or more like a Western, Western way that we have adopted of owning properties. Because Western property ownership legislations or laws are just, they are a lot. I'll give you an example. From where I come from, traditionally, if if you have and everyone that has been to Tura, you know, can see this. And actually, Tura is an excellent example of why we need a lot of consultations with regards to ownership of properties, especially land, the Western way. If you go to Tura, you just see that some of the footpaths are leading. Are leading through someone's.
Look at the back.
Namra. Now, I know.
If you see those ties, ne?
I know that uniform. Now, look, the thing is, take for example, in the Western way of property ownership, which is basically, we use Roman Dutch law. That's as Western as it can get.
Mm.
You have things like, you have things like servitude, for example, that gives you the right of way to, that gives you the right that you can register with the, that you can, although it's what's called a limited real right. It's just a right in terms of ownership basically means you have your name of on the deeds documents of that property. Now, limited real right is like you renting. That's basically, that will be your limited real right. You have access to the building. You have a written agreement drawn out, but it's the property is not on your name.
Mm.
So if you want to use someone's in the Western way of ownership, if you want to use someone's piece of land as a walkway for you to get to the river or to get to the main road, you need a contract. But we don't do that here. You just walk through. If there's a path, just walk. And I don't think I can explain servitude in my language, because there are a lot of concepts that just doesn't exist in my culture.
Mm.
Now, when you talk about adopting something like that, and our development in terms of expanding, expanding like the municipal type of type of environments. You're talking about legislations that are influenced by central government, and you're talking about bylaws that are obviously made by the public officials of these respective municipalities, and all these things are very Western, and we have adopted it. And now we already saw, and I like how Kurenkuru was an excellent example, because people were like, okay, you know what? A few days ago, I was fetching water for free. The river is just there. I can get it. Thank you for bringing me a tip, but I didn't ask for it.
Mm.
Now, how do you go about generating revenue for that environment, for that specific service provision, if someone is telling you something like that. You can't force them because that will be you violating their right.
Yes. Well, it's also a discussion, Amr, of do you go and dictate a situation, and then people ask you, but let me help you even with your example.
Yeah.
So yesterday, a day in Rehoboth, helping my sister move into her place. I stand there seeing a bike, because Rehoboth is one of those towns that get, their water and electricity gets disconnected regularly by the utility companies of Namibia.
Yeah.
Because the local authority doesn't pay. And then
not surprised,
I see this double cab Toyota Baki driving past me, and I stand there as a Vintukarmus now. I observe this. This double cab drives past me with like that massive container for water that you can fit onto the back of a bucky.
Yeah.
It's that square one.
Not the one that captures rain. Like whitish, transparent-ish ones.
Yeah, but then it has like a mesh wire net.
Around it.
And then it's got it's like a water inlet. It's inlet.
It's at the top.
It's at the top. And then such a thing drives past me full of water. And then I tell my brother, so how do you have money to afford $500,000 worth bucky, but you don't have water at your house?
Because the bills, the money that is supposed to pay for the water is going to paying for the car.
It's going to be paying for the car.
Yes.
Now, it's dilemmas like that, Hamoud,
yeah,
that you sometimes sit there wondering to yourself, like in Namibian context, or like in an African context, how do we have money to do this? But you couldn't channel that money to achieve this priority.
I think that's where the keyword is. Yeah. Priority. For you, the priority is water. For him, it's the car. The water comes in secondary.
And then it's also a scenario of, like the discussion on the industrialization that I pointed out to a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
So, for 30 years, like I said, for 30 years, Namibia was preaching we must industrialize.
Point of correction, Africa was preaching.
No, but I'm talking about Namibia.
Ah, okay.
Because we've been preaching to ourselves we must industrialize. We're still preaching it.
Yeah.
And then, when we're on the cusp of achieving in some form of industrialization, which can potentially absorb a lot of people working for it, we realize there's that ratio of the VTCs that
29 to 1.
We will have 29 jobs to one Namibian. In
when is that happening, though? It must come quickly.
I suspect, Hamoud, because when I spoke to one of the people from Hyphen earlier this year at that event that they, the MOU signing that they had with JZ Namibia, they're still ongoing with the skills mapping. Meaning you can even go and now just go and put your CV up there and say what your skills are.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to measure the extent of local content participation through, not just through employment, but also through what service can you provide potentially.
Yeah.
Now, a skills mapping exercise, Helmut, it's a sly way of basically assessing what is out there. I say sly way, what is assessing out there. But it was done transparently. I mean, I reported on the thing. I wrote an article about the thing.
Yeah.
It's a slight sly way, but it's actually a way of saying, listen, we will definitely have these jobs, but we definitely want to know that there's a Namibian out there that can do the job. It's a definite. This is not a order with me. This is not a fly-by-night scam. This is not even a pig butchery. There's not even a pig butchering scam.
Mm.
Nah? This is literally, the job will be there. The job will pay a lot. But are you there?
What it takes to participate in the industry.
Yeah. Are you there? The oil will do the same thing.
Yeah.
You will hear the same oil guys will potentially go and buy that data set from that company Hyphen, and ask them, listen, we want to see how many of these people are in Namibia. Here's some money. Thank you. We'd like your data. And then they will recycle that data.
You know what? I heard that the oil guys, I mean, it's 300 kilometers offshore and, you know, it requires diving. I know someone that likes diving.
Yeah.
Really hope he's not listening. Of all things, diving. Don't understand that guy.
But that's now for welding underwater and fixing things underwater, which is the Event Horizon situation stuff.
Hey, now don't scare our boss.
Which boss? Oh. Why? Okay.
Look, he already likes diving. All he has to do is learn how to weld and, you know, went to vocational training center, he's a problem solved. Then he can participate directly in the industry. I think he's listening.
Yes, he is, Ahmed. You know it.
Now, let's, we are 17 minutes into the hour of 7. And yes, it's still home run. You are not lost. It's, you know, it's home run extended. From 2 hours to 3 hours, and every Monday and Friday we have a little bit of basically a dent of other shows in our home run shows, and those are not interruptions. Mm. Those are actually good for paying the bills. So we actually run, we would be running, that's basically Wednesday, not Wednesday, Tuesday to Thursday. We are going to be running from 4 o'clock to 7, and you know, until further notice, Monday and Fridays are the only ones that will have, you know, for Monday we'll have 2 hours. That's from 5 to, no, that's from, yeah, from 5 to 7. And for Tuesday, no, for Friday it's only 30 minutes that is taken out by the Childline Lifeline program. So, page 226 of that report, Africa. African countries generated almost 925 terawatt hour of electricity in 2024, almost as much as Japan. And
I don't know which one is more insulting or which one is more embarrassing.
That sentence is very, it was sounding very awesome until it went to almost as much as Japan. But we have a commercial break coming up. We'll continue on the other side. Home Run with Helm and Dwight on Eagle FM.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back from that break. So we continue. So where was I? How we are being compared in terms of energy generation with Japan. Have you seen Japan by landmass? Now, let me repeat that again. African countries generated almost 925 terawatt of electricity in 2024. Almost as much as Japan, a country with 8% of Africa's population. But it's things like this that makes me go with, oh my God.
And remember, that country has...
Our energy generation as a continent...
Is the scale of one.
Is the scale... It's almost... Not the, not, it's not at the scale yet.
Mm.
It's almost at the scale that Japan...
Yeah, it's not. We're not even at China.
We'll be there in 200 years. Now, the thing is...
we're not even on India's level yet.
Nowhere near. Almost... So, you know what that means? Investment in the industry.
Yeah, but where does it come from, Helmut?
Yeah.
We can't just be running, well, basically every time to go and say, please come and invest more in us.
Uh-huh.
And then we get a minister that comes and says, yeah, so 50% of mines and the company that you run. Remember the Robin Sherborne analysis start of the year? Which also highlighted that it seems like no one knew where NIF and TPEG went. They just silently disappeared because they were claiming 50% ownerships of people's of other people's businesses, but you didn't show up with the money. And if you had the money, why didn't you start this, the business yourself? Yeah, because we go and tell Namibia, we go and tell the international investor, yeah, pay $300 million for Namibian dollars for a seismic survey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we then go and make that $300 million a benchmark for everyone, meaning Namibian or foreign. And definitely, you the Namibian, the pockets are not so deep for you.
Yeah. I mean, we can see the exact same thing in the tourism industry.
Yeah.
The prices are just set up for foreign consumers.
Oh, Helmut, I want you to read the point, bullet point 1, 2, 3, 4. The one that says today 80% of Africa's iron making capacity.
On what page are you?
That same page, 212, at the start of the chapter.
Oh no.
Is direct reduced iron, which provides a strong basis for blending hydrogen with natural gas in existing and new plants. But.
Bullet number 3.
No, 4.
4, okay. Today, over 80% of Africa's iron-making capacity is based on direct reduced iron, which produces a strong basis for blending hydrogen with natural gas in existing and new plants. Africa is a net exporter. Uh-huh. That's what I was afraid of, because that's why I always try my level best to have discussions like this from a manufacturing standpoint and an investment standpoint, because that's where all the jobs that we want are based on. That's where all the jobs and all the economic development that we want in terms of energy security, that's where they're coming from. Not from a consumer, just a pure consumer, consumer standpoint. But that's where we are actually, that's where we have a lot of potentials. Because we are not investing much in manufacturing and investment, we are leaving a lot of doors open for just being consumers, just in being an available market for whoever has the best breakthrough in terms of making the technology efficiency, whether they are east, west, or central.
Yeah. Now, go back to point 2, Helmut, which says, today, only 6, I think that's probably kilotons of low-emissions hydrogen is produced in Africa. Exclusively from renewables, which factors in Namibia. The hydrogen project pipeline in 2030 has 31 projects, which could allow increasing production to 1.2 million tons, but only one has reached final investment decision. Just one out of 54 markets. The next sentence after that sentence, which ends at just one, many projects are at gigawatt scale and will take time to bring to fruition. Chinese companies have been active in financing and developing projects in Africa, as well as supplying equipment to these projects. There's no problem with providing equipment and selling it to Africa.
Oh, I got the next point.
Yeah.
Africa's fertilizer use is about one sixth of the global average, and the continent has a large food trade deficit. Domestic production of ammonia could improve access to hydrogen fertilizer surrounding high agricultural productivity and food production, while reducing exposure to price volatility. That point reminded me of us only finding out in 2022, was that 2022, yeah, that the bread we've been eating is made out of wheat coming out of Ukraine.
And Russia.
Yep.
Because Russia was sanctioning Ukrainian wheat, and Russian wheat was being sanctioned by the rest of the world. No? By NATO.
And then we sent Macky Sall to go and say, as a belief man here,
be humane towards us.
Yeah.
We don't care what you're doing between each other. Well, it actually worked.
Yeah. Oh, no, we're very good at begging. Yeah. You're surprised it worked.
Another dimension, Amut, primarily, is this whole chapter. So, dear listeners, just so that you know, this whole chapter that we were now just citing,
yeah,
says, if Africa coulda, woulda, maybe, in future, has potential.
Oh, the potential, oh dear Lord.
This is the whole language of this one chapter. They literally put us last. And if you look at the, because there's even a thing of status and prospects of for hydrogen in Africa, and the dimensions also speak towards, it's as if, Helmut, we live in this vacuum outside of the rest of the world, where the rest of the world seems to be developing faster, minus the bombs and the explosions and the war. But it seems like we don't have the same ideas for ourselves. We don't see ourselves in the same big picture.
Ideas need money to bring them to fruition.
Yeah, but where do you get the money? You need more than these national youth funds.
Mm-hmm.
Not just one national youth fund.
You then
need a business stimulating fund for nothing that's youth oriented.
You know what I'm going to recommend?
What?
What the Urban and Rural Development recommended to newly elected regional councilors and local councillors in Rundu at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
There are a lot of funding access mechanism even for for public officials on a constituency and regional level.
Yes.
All you just have to do is follow the channels. The recommendation came from the minister himself. Just go through us. We'll help you through it. We'll just follow the whole procedure, which also requires, involves the Ministry of Finance.
Mm.
And we're good to go.
Mm.
My fear is, just before that advice was, that recommendation was thrown out there. I know it's in the legislation. So I know not a lot of public officials knew that already. If they did not, then that picture is even more scarier. That's why I don't want to think about that alternative. So, when you look at it that way, my biggest fear is we're going to have fish rot in every constituency.
Mm.
Or Mozambique, or now Senegal, and Senegal, Jesus, 7 billion. Holy cow. I thought Mozambique was bad.
Yeah.
Now the thing is, that means if we are going to have, we want to urbanize, we want to decentralize as a country in terms of economic activities, trade, political power, for the good of our country's economy and democracy. So two birds with one stone. So now when you look at it, the first thing that you begin to see is that as a local, as a constituency or regional, councillor, or public official with that power that the Minister of Urban and Rural Development was talking about, following alternative methods of funding for your constituency's development. They are there. You can execute them. You can do that as long as you're just following the proper channels. Because at the end of the day, receipts have to be compiled.
Mm.
And all those receipts and all the everything,
and reporting,
reporting and everything have to be, the Minister of Finance, which is why the involvement of the Minister of Finance is a very important thing. Now, here's the thing. So that is obviously an excellent way.
Yeah.
That's an excellent way of decentralizing economic activities in the country. But that brings up the capital projects discussion. where public officials were asked about the projects taking place in their constituencies. And some of them, I kid you not, and that's according to the Natural Resources Standing Committee report. What project?
Okay, for the local councils, which are politicians, the thing is, Hamoud, what I've observed from their actions is that they react to something.
Reactionary.
They are reactionary. They don't sit with an idea of saying, let me take my town forward, or let me take my neighborhood forward, or let me work with the other opposition MPs. And let's try and move forward.
I think that's part of the problem. And it's a good thing you point that out. It's because it's one thing that was pointed out by those, anti-corruption, you know how anti-corruptions, meet like on a SADC level to talk about how to combat corruption and, in SADC. There are also a group of public officials that met, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, some from Uganda, Tanzania. They met in South Africa to talk about, a financing mechanism and how to make basically, all the finances move in the public sphere more fluid and responsibly. And there are two representatives that I remember correctly, that one came from Tanzania and then the other one was from Uganda. One thing they pointed out was, there's a lot of politics going on in public office. People don't want to work with each other, not because the projects are bad or the environment itself is bad per se. Mm. It's just because they're from different political parties. And that is very dumb. Because you are in public office, not your political party office.
Yeah.
So a lot of people then are putting, their political party ideologies and ways of doing things in the pilot seat. And everything public is in the passenger seat when it's supposed to be the other way around. So I think until we actually get through, first of all, if we want to control our economy, we have got to start funding our initiatives. And look, man, anyone that's investing in your country is going to need their money back.
Yes.
You don't have to like it. That's how things work. It's an investment, not a donation.
No, but Hamoud, that's not for you and me to say here to each other. It's
don't worry, there's a microphone here.
it's for whichever ministry to go and tell the people in the regions.
Yeah.
And the councillors.
Thank you.
You are liable for every cent you spend.
Yeah.
For every approval of every project that you wish to champion. Because the question, obviously, from, let's for example say the IPPR's procurement tracker discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that there's usually an assessment of how many public entities have released their procurement plans,
yeah,
and procurement strategies,
yeah,
and then they've got to give report at the end of a procurement of a financial year, the rate or execution rate of said procurement activities,
yeah,
meaning how much money was dispensed in which projects these are.
Mm.
Now that is the best barometer for you and me, for Dwight and Helmut, the WhatsApp qualified experts.
I'm not in a documentary.
Leave the documentary thing. Okay. I just borrowed his label for that particular. Now you're busy throwing stones for no reason. So once again, let me start again.
Yeah.
It's not for. Okay, I won't call us also WhatsApp qualified because we're not WhatsApp qualified. Okay, so let's say for the lay person,
yeah,
to primarily highlight grievances that they don't fully understand.
Yeah.
But we have to ask a question primarily of this discussion of now trying to be transparent, of open contracting, of EITI-ness, and trying to achieve the most desired level of a society.
Yeah.
If you ask yourself, Helmut, wouldn't it have been greater if, for example, the regional council of Hardap shows up with an industrial policy? the regional council of because Comas can't do anything. I'm sorry, Comas. You guys are just placeholders. You technically can't do anything. City of Windhoek does everything for you.
Yeah, and we also have to wrap it up.
Yeah. So on that particular note, dear listeners, I'll just cut it short right there. The aspect about money would have been a lot more detailed if everybody had the opportunity, if like local governments had the opportunity to account for money and basically be in control of things. However, the reality is the other side.
Yeah. Until tomorrow.
Same time, same place, guys. Enjoy the rest of your evening in our company. And we'll see each other again.
Yeah, boom.